Good seeing you, Bethlehem Church. Thanks for worshiping with us. Man, so good to be with you across our campuses. Oconee 211, Pastor Jeremy, Pastor Drew. I always remind you there are hundreds of other people sitting at another campus being a part of Bethlehem Church. So we're so glad you're with us this morning here at 316. You guys look great, and I am reminded more and more of the influence God has granted us. And man, I mean, this morning got a message from, there's somebody in Pennsylvania whose family goes here. They're in the hospital dealing with liver issues, and man, we love you. We're glad you're here. Church in Nicaragua that uses this church as their part of their worship service. So glad you're here, right? Man, people all over, and man, it's just cool to see God doing his thing and getting to be a part of it. But the best service of the day, if you ask me, don't tell the other services, but if you ask me, the best service, some of you are like, I go to the early one, y'all are my favorite, but you're here at the late one, it's all good. Hop in, and here's what we're going to do. We're in a series on Elijah, a few weeks. Elijah, I want to start the same way I started last week. I want to start this week using a word that we don't normally use, but I need all of you to say it, because again, I took a few weeks off preaching, so I'm getting back in the rhythm. I got to make sure you're with me. Here's the word. We don't use it oftentimes, but we've all used it. Some of you, like, that is epic. You know, you've used it before. It was epic, you know, okay. But we're going to say it together on the count of three just to make sure we're all on the same page. One, two, three. Epic. Like, your team has played in a game that was epic. Epic is unforgettable. Epic is unbelievable. Epic is there's nothing else like it. Your team has played in a game that was epic. If you're a Georgia fan, remember a few years ago, the Rose Bowl. That was epic. Week after, not so much. But the Rose Bowl is like epic, big, like, yeah. Right? If you go on a destination, you go on a vacation, you go to a place, I told you my family got to go to Hawaii in June. Epic. But here's the thing. If everything is epic, then nothing is epic. That's why we don't use the word all the time. Because not everything is epic. 1 Kings chapter 18 is epic. There's an epic picture in the Old Testament that you only see. And it's a showdown between God, the one true and living God, and the prophets of Baal are the false gods. Elijah and Ahab are going to have a showdown. Elijah and Ahab are going to have a showdown. The God of Israel had called Elijah to go and to confront the nation of Israel because they become idolaters. They become people who worship false gods. He called Elijah up, rose him up. He goes before Ahab, the evil king, and says this. You either change your ways, right? You wake up because you're worshiping false gods, or there's going to be a drought that comes on you. I shouldn't say or. There's going to be a drought because you're doing this. And so for 3 years, there's a drought. Elijah goes away into a place of obscurity. If you weren't here last week, we talked about that. Ahab, the evil king, has been worshiping Jezebel, his wife, has been worshiping the nation of Israel, worshiping their gods, and there's going to be a showdown. And so you pick up with the story, and the danger is to think about this big, huge showdown in the Old Testament that seems surreal, that maybe you've heard growing up, or if you haven't, it's going to be brand new to you. You're going to like, man, that's unbelievable. What has it got to do with my life? Here's what I would say. Outside of the gospel of Jesus Christ itself, the cross, I don't think there is a more relevant and prevalent story in all of Scripture that is a great picture of what our culture has become today than this. Than this. Right? So I want you to see it. 1 Kings chapter 18. Here's what it said. When Ahab saw Elijah, Ahab, the evil king, says, it's you, troubler of Israel. Now, what does troubler of Israel mean? You who wreak havoc. You who brought pestilence. You who brought a plague. You're the reason we're under a drought. You, Elijah, you're the problem. Now, 3 years, he's still so delusional that maybe them worshiping false gods like Baal and Asherah, these gods from a foreign country, maybe that's part of the reason they're under a drought. He's so delusional in his understanding, he blames Elijah. Well, Elijah's been by himself for a few, you know, years, and so he's not going to have any of it. So look at what Elijah says. I've not troubled you. I've not troubled Israel, but you have, and your father's house, because you've abandoned the commandments of the Lord and you worship the Baals, the false gods. Now, therefore, send and gather all Israel to me at Mount Carmel and the 450 prophets of Baal. So he's one prophet, Elijah, of the true and living God. The prophets of Baal that Jezebel's brought along, there's 450 of them. Then Baal's, you know, wife, Asherah, right, these false gods, right, his other half, if you will, Asherah, they've got 400. He goes, bring them all who eat at Jezebel's table. On a side note, that's got to be a really big table, but that's neither here nor there. right? It's like 450 prophets of Baal, 400 prophets of Asherah. You meet me at Mount Carmel. We're about to have a showdown. This was not going to be between Elijah and Ahab. I need you to hear me. This was a showdown between God and the false gods. Between God and the false god. And everything revolved around this one word, worship. But we'll get there in a second. This is Mount Carmel. How many of you have been to Israel in the room? Anybody been to Israel? All of our campuses? You can see Mount Carmel. Am I correct? If you go on a tour, they will show you where this mountain is. This is a modern picture of Mount Carmel. Right? And they're going to say, he's like, get the false prophets. Bring them up here. Go get them. We're going to have a showdown. Now, let me give you a side note. We got to all agree on something. All humans, listen to me. We all are convinced we're all so unique. We're all so different. We all walk our different path. We all have our different experiences. We all have our different personalities. I'm with you. But we are more alike than we think we are. Like, think about it. We share more in common. Everybody in this room breathes. Take a deep breath. You got to do that to live. We all do that. Everybody eats. Anybody with me? Some of you eat a lot cleaner than the rest of us, okay? But everybody eats. Everybody sleeps. Some of you sleep more than the rest of us. It's a compliment. You're into sleeping. Good for you. We all feel. We all have emotions. Some of us have more emotions than others, right? You know what else we do? Every one of us in this room, if you're human, you worship. And what we do when someone says the word worship, here's what happens. We automatically think, well, I'm not much of the religious type. Or we think, I'm not really into music or singing. That's not my thing. But if you are a human and you have body, you have emotions, and you have a mind, my friend, then you are a worshiper, because worship is factory installed. Like when you got something for your kids that says factory included, what does that mean? Comes with it. Batteries are factory included. If you're a person with a body, emotions, a mind, and a will, worship is part of your DNA. From the time we're born and introduced to milk, we are always chasing after what we think will satisfy our appetites, right? Worship is the built-in human reflex to decide, this thing right here will make me happy, this thing will give me fulfillment, this thing will crave my appetites, and to go after it. Right? And to go after it. Here's the way I say it. If you're taking notes, your Bethlehem Church notes, your Bethlehem Church app, man, just if you're not, cool, hang with me. But here's what I would say. Humans, we don't learn how to worship. We choose who or what to worship. David Foster Wallace, who was a famed American author, took his life in 2008. Standing in front of a big college doing a commencement service, he made these famous words. He wasn't a devout believer at all. But when he looked at life, secular college, Kenyon College, he stood up, this famed author that, I mean, millennials, just kind of a champion, right? He goes, listen, here's what I've deduced about life. You can look at it online. Everybody worships. The only choice is what we choose to worship. This guy's he's not a preacher, not a prophet. He's an author. He goes, when I look at life, here's what I've learned. Everybody worships. We only choose what. Somewhere along the way life works is you decide and I decide what's important. And then we decide to align our life, our mind, our body, our emotions around that. And we go for it. Elijah comes on the scene, not because the nation of Israel didn't know how to worship. But here it is. It's because they were conflicted in their worship. Your problem this morning, whether you're a music person or a singing person or not, is not that you're not really into worship. No. You're into worship. It's factory installed, big shot. It's in there. You know how to put your mind, your emotions, your body, and your energy towards something and go for it. Think about it. The word monotheism, right? We said it last week. What is that? Let's say it together. 1, 2, 3. You guys act like you don't even care. I'm joking. Let's say it one more time. I know it took you off guard. 1, 2, 3. Monotheism is the worship in one God. Polytheism, let's say that word together just so we can sound smart because we've been at church. 1, 2, 3. That's the worship of multiple gods, or the belief in multiple gods. You and I are people who believe in the one true and living God, and that his name is Jesus Christ. You with me? But we live among a time of multiple gods and polytheism. You and I live in a culture of polytheism and multiple gods. What do you mean? And I'm not just talking about Allah and Buddha. Some of you go, yeah, man, there's just all these faults. I'm not even getting to them. I'm talking about more of the socially acceptable gods, the gods of our culture, the gods we don't call gods. What do you mean? The gods of money, the gods of sex, the gods of power, the gods of comfort, the gods of political ideology, the gods of the culture war, the gods of success. We have a tendency to think when we read an Old Testament story, shh, these primitive people and their silly false gods, look at me. You and I are no different. You and I are no different. In fact, the best definition of worship, that just, especially for dudes, dudes just have a hard time admitting that we worship anything but God, because just like guys have the hardest time, man, I'm God, okay. Let me give you a definition that kind of goes, okay, I see it, right? Here you go. What do you mean? When someone or when something becomes so important to you, this is so big, that it drives your behaviors and commands your emotions, you're worshiping it. Drives your behaviors, commands your emotions. Drives your behaviors, commands your emotions. That's what worship is. Right? That's what worship is. So let's get to the showdown. That's why Jesus, I mean, I shouldn't even say, think, remember, Exodus 20, first commandment wasn't be nice to people. The first commandment was what? You shall have what? No other. He knows our heart. Jesus, what's the most important commandment? Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God is one. Worship the Lord with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Worship. Love the Lord your God. Right, it's what you set your mind towards, your affection, you begin to live for. So here's the showdown. Ahab sent to all the people of Israel, gather the prophets together at Mount Carmel. Elijah came near to all the people and said, how long will you go limping between the two different opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him. But if it's Baal, then follow him. And the people didn't answer him a word. Why? Maybe they're startled by the whole scene they see. One prophet of God, 850 prophets of false gods. Maybe they're just like, what are we seeing? Or maybe they're shocked because Elijah called them out. I think for the first time they were going, wait a second, what have we become? Didn't say a word, but I love that definition, or that a guy who tries to say sticky statements so you'll remember. I love that they were limping between. Isn't that good? Limping between. Some translations may say vacillating. Some may say hobbling. But it's a great definition, because when you're limping, you're not fully running. You're not fully standing. You're not fully walking. You're not in full strength. You're kind of between two different postures when you're limping. Elijah goes, stop limping between the two. Baal, Asherah, or the God of Israel, the one true and living God. Stop limping between the two. If it's Yahweh, it's Yahweh. If it's not, make a choice and serve. He just say, listen, make a choice and serve. Pastorally, in just a minute, I'm going to put my Elijah hat on and just talk to us in 2021. But he's saying, if you got to make a choice and serve it, because truthfully, you're not serving God and you're not being served either, if you'll be honest with you, because you're stuck in two different worlds. You're stuck. That's what he's saying. Be honest. Now, let's go back to the human thing. Authentic and real. That's our vibe, man. Authentic. I'm all about people being real, man. You know what we don't like as humans, especially in our culture, because we see it so much right here? Somebody being disingenuous. Somebody being disingenuous. That's what he's calling them out on, being disingenuous. In fact, if you're taking notes, here's what I want you to put down. Divided allegiance is as wrong as open idolatry. That divided allegiance between two camps is as wrong as open idolatry. That's what Elijah's called. He's saying you're being disingenuous. Do you know what disingenuous is? It's not outright lying. It's not bold-faced lying. It's not being candid or sincere. So let me give you an example. Driving down the road, you're going 65 and a 45, and a cop pulls you over, and you go, I didn't know. Do you know how fast you were going, ma'am? I had no clue. Why are you saying, ma'am? Okay, sir. Right? You say, I didn't know. I didn't know it was a school zone. I mean, there's yellow buses and the lights are blinking. I never knew. I wasn't looking at my phone. I was praying. No, you weren't. You were looking at your phone. It's disingenuous. You know you were going fast. You just wasn't planning on getting caught. Or students, you're going back to school. You don't turn your homework in. You don't turn your exam in. You're going, and the teacher's like, hey, turn it in this Thursday. And you get there and you don't have it, and you're like, I thought you said the third Thursday. I didn't know you said this Thursday. Like back in the day before the digital world, when you did, you could get away with that because your parents didn't know a whole lot. Now it's like they're on text chain and it's on the website. Projects due, projects due. I hadn't, you have a clue. What he is saying is stop being disingenuous. Just own it. So let me be the prophet Elijah in the 21st century today. Here's what he's saying. What do you got to remember is Ahab was the king. He was the king of Israel. So it means he came up in Israel, but he's influenced by Jezebel. Jezebel was from, so here's what he had a heritage worshiping the one true and living God, but his influence was polytheistic, which means he worshiped many gods. Here's what I'm saying. Ahab's heritage wasn't as strong as his cultural influences. Make sure you get that. Been a Christian my whole life. Okay. Ahab's influence, Ahab's heritage wasn't as strong as his cultural influence, the Jezebel in his ear all the time. Are you with me, church? So here's what Elijah would say. 21st century, stop limping between. If you're watching online, 211 Oconee, wherever you're at, here's what he's saying. If money is your functional God, if it controls your behavior and drives your emotions, if you will be honest, here's what he's saying. You just need to go all in for it. I mean, go in for it. You need to make as much, here's my advice to you, here's my encouragement to you, make as much as you can. Cut corners, climb the success ladder, don't worry about integrity, make as much as you can, and truthfully, don't give any of it away because you're the one who works harder than everybody. You've earned it, you keep it. Here's what Elijah's saying, if money's your God, just be honest about it and give it the chance to satisfy you. If comfort, what, Pastor, we live here and you know, we're more blue collar around here. Money's not our thing. Okay, let's get up under it then. If money's not your thing, here's what Elijah's saying. If comfort's your deal, because that's the American dream, comfort. Security and confidence comes in our level of comfort we have. So here's what he's saying. If comfort's what's going to give you what you think it will, go for it. Go all for it. What do you mean? Buy that brand new SUV. The one you got's 3 years old. That's ancient. No, don't laugh. I'm real. You need to max. Don't tell Dave Ramsey, but max out every credit card you can. Seriously, you need to max it out. Max out your debt limits. What you need to do? Go for it. If she's got it down the street, sweetheart, you need to have it in your house. Go for it, man. It needs to be because you got to give it the chance. If image and sex is your God, because that's what it is in our culture. The way we appear is why nobody wants to get old. We all, hey, 50's the new 30. No, it's 50. You know, 50's the new, okay. 50's, no, I mean, you're 50. You know what I mean? It's okay. It's no big deal. I'm starting to come catch you here in 30 years. I'm going to get there, right? 22. I've been pastoring since I was 12. It's fantastic. Now, listen. But if image and sex is your thing, here's what Elijah's saying. Go for it. Right? You need to go after it. You need to do what you want to do with who, do what you want to do when you want to do it with who you want to do it with. A fantasy and pleasure is it. You need to watch it. You need to see it. And you need to do it. Give yourself completely to it. What you need to do is follow your heart and desires because how could they ever betray you? That's what you need to do. Follow your heart and desires. They'll never betray you. Your heart is, go for it. That's what Elijah's saying. Stop being disingenuous. That's what he's looking at him saying. So I remember a few years back, somebody got baptized. A lot of times family members come see people baptized. We'll do one in a few weeks. Awesome Sundays. Somebody was baptized. I'm talking to the family members, and they're like, thanks so much. What a great service, Pastor. We enjoyed being here. I was like, awesome, thanks. And I invited them to come back. I said, y'all should come back every Sunday, man. We love it. It's a great family here. It's a great church. Here's what they said. Cindy, my assistant, was there. Here's what they said. They were super kind, but they go, hey, man, I appreciate it, but God's not really our thing. That's what they looked at me and said. God's not really our thing. I thought, okay. And they go, you know, we're really busy people. We got a whole lot going. I mean, our schedule's completely full. And so God's not our thing. This isn't something we would normally do. We just came to support him. You know what? I respected their genuineness. Just a level of respect. You're going, well, at least they know where they stand. That's what Elijah's saying. Stop acting, going, hey, worship the one true and living God, but you're running in the other camp. You're running the other camp. See, at times, you can be fooled because our heart of fool is good things in our life become ultimate things. Good things like success. Good things like career. Good things like love. Good things like family. Good things like kids. They become ultimate things that drive our emotions and control our behaviors. Again, take worship out of your mind. Drive your emotions, control your behaviors. Drives your emotions, how you feel, and controls what you do. That's what you worship. And man, in the suburbs, I mean, let's just be honest. Our kids are become our functional gods. So here's what Elijah would say. Go for it. Make them the king. Go for it. Make them the king. I mean, you need to keep them busy. You need to keep them in every extracurricular activity. You need to make sure their self-esteem's really high. You need to make, need to show, I mean, it's all on you because their success reflects on you. And so you need to make sure they're really busy. They're socially acceptable. In fact, you need to sign them up for everything and let them drive your calendar and schedule. You don't need to choose for them. You need to let them choose for you. Go all in. You don't need to put them on one travel team. You need to put them on two, maybe three. Because they're in charge anyway. They're your God. They control. That's what he is saying. Can I say it like this? Here's the way Elijah's saying it. Just because you don't sing to it doesn't mean you don't serve it. Now, let me raise my hand. Do you know what functionally in my life I can let control my behaviors and drive my emotions, become my functional God? This right here. What I do for a living. Do you know how easy it is for me when you're gifted at it? God uses it in people's life. Many of you come up and say, thanks so much. Do you know how much if I let this become, do you know how many times I have to go before God and say, search my heart, oh God. Know my ways. This is a good thing that becomes an ultimate thing. It's all of us. So this is not me pointing a finger. This is saying in our life, there are other things that become functional gods, and we just have to own it. All right, we just have to own it. I love what Kyle Ottman says, half-hearted Christians. He said, half-hearted Christians are the most miserable people of all. They know enough about God to feel guilty, but they haven't gone far enough with Christ to be happy. Be all out for him. So Elijah looks at the prophets, and here's what he says. Looks at the prophets of Baal. Time to make a sacrifice. Right? Get a bull. That's what they would do back in the day. He looks at the prophets of Baal. He goes, make it, get a bull, cut it up, put it on an altar, and then begin to sacrifice to the god of Baal. And if that god's there, he will throw down rain. So they do that. And look at what it says in verse 27. At noon, Elijah mocked them, saying, cry aloud, for he's God. Either he's musing or he's relieving himself or he's on a journey or perhaps he's asleep and must be awakened. Now, I can't just stop. I got to stop there. How great is that? They've been praying. They've been worshiping, saying, God, send down rain, right? God, or excuse me, like light this thing up, man, so we know you're the one true and living God, and nothing, right? And nothing. And so Elijah looks at him and does a little old school trash talk. Keep on going, boys. Maybe he's on a business trip. Maybe he's in the bathroom. He's got to wash his hands. Give him a few minutes. You know what I'm saying? Or maybe he's distracted. So then the story turns dark. And they cried aloud and they cut themselves. That's their custom with swords and lances until the blood gushed upon them. Many of us in this room know people, or maybe we've struggled ourselves with hurting ourselves, harming ourselves. That's what's happening here. And as midday passed, they raved on until the offering of oblation. But there was no voice. No one answered. And no one paid attention. Listen to me, church. You know why? Because there was no one there. Two things. There's so much you can do in this passage. I want to honor your time. But two things I would tell you. False gods will promise you what only the true God can deliver on. False gods, even the good things in your life, they will make you promises only true God can deliver on. Here's the second thing. False gods will make you do things you never thought you would. False gods will ask you to perform for them. Don't miss the significance. No rain for 3 years. Been a drought. Did you know Baal's name was the god of fertility? That's what he was known as. You know the other name they called him? The Lord of Rain. So for 3 years, God had made it stop raining to wake them up. And then he calls down a fire, right? Or he calls down basically and says, hey, if he's really the God of rain, he should deliver. False gods can promise you only what the true God can deliver on. Do you know this, church? Money and control, money and comfort in our society are the illusion of control. Money and comfort in our society are the illusion of control. You and me both get sucked into it. You and me both get sucked into it. It promises you a full life, but really what it does is give you a lot of stuff and leaves you with an empty heart. Come on, church. Right? It's the illusion of a full life. You know what else is? Image and sex in our culture is the illusion of freedom, right? Of my personal freedom and status. Listen to me. This is not something 15-year-olds deal with. This is all of us. Sex and image, our appearance, it's the illusion. What it is freedom and status. Look at me. Let me tell you, that's what it'll promise you. Can I tell you what? When you live for that, when you're driven by the way you appear, when you're driven by the affection, right? When you're driven by the experience of a one night, if you're driven by the pleasure you find from watching a screen, listen to me. You need to tell you, it'll promise you all type of freedom. It'll promise you, let me tell you what it'll do. It'll leave you alone at home at night with a whole lot of baggage and a lot of shame. It cannot deliver on what God can. Your family, your spouse, my son, my daughter, my kids, great gifts from God. So I want to kind of clarify this because people miss this sometimes. Ministry is a great gift. All good, but they're not ultimate things. So let me say this to you. The greatest gift, the problem is not that we want things. The problem is not we love things. The problem is we try to get out of things what they were never supposed to give. So let me say it again, because a lot of people, whenever I push on, especially in the South, family and kids, everybody gets wonky on me. Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Family and kids. So my wife is a great gift in my life. She's unbelievably gifted. At her best, she's a great gift. At my best in her life, I'm at most of my time, I'm a great gift. Just kidding. See if you're listening. Right? I'm a great gift. My kids, great gifts. When they're at their best, they are great gifts in my life. But can I tell you what? They're great gifts. They're not ultimate things. So when I put the expectation on them that they're supposed to deliver for me something they can't, they will disappoint me every time. Are they good things? Yeah. But they'll disappoint me. So then they start slashing themselves. They start cutting themselves. It's a really awful scene. Slashing and cutting themselves. Do you know the acceptance and approval of others? Do you know what it'll make people do? How far they'll go and they'll look up going, what in the world have I become? You know, the people I've sat with right over here in my office, that men that chase success and it made them do and become something they never thought they would, and they lost their family on the way. And they never saw it. Right? They never saw it. They missed it. What happens when happiness becomes our God? It's just amazing. Do you know how many people's story are? How did I end up here? How did our family get here? How did things get so out of whack? This is a familiar scene. This is a chaotic scene. Can I say this to you? You and I are living in a time where nobody will say it, but I'm going to say it one more time. You can remember this. Just because you don't sing to it don't mean you don't worship it. And we are watching a culture in 2021 in America of people who are performing for false gods that are not there. We are a culture that may say we're one nation under God. We left that a long time ago. And I'm not talking about Allah and Buddha. I'm talking about we're chasing all kind of gods, thinking they will give us something. And what I'm saying to the church in our country, the church in America, Bethlehem Church, is the breakthrough is when you can be genuine enough to be able to own. Here's how God begins to deliver you from it. When you can genuinely own, there are times in your life that you are driven, your emotions and behaviors are driven by something other than God. Every one of us. It's an invitation, not condemnation. Because just like Ahab and the Israelites, we don't see it. So let me get real practical. How do you do a self-examination in your life? Because again, we don't think like that. Well, let me put this. Here's the last part of your notes. Disordered loves lead to disordered lives. It's a chaotic scene. I'm going to talk a lot in August. August is going to be a series you don't want to miss. All the cultural tensions of our time right now, I'm going to go after it and just get everybody mad at me. It's going to be fun. August 8th and on, we're going to go for it. But I'm telling you right now, let me tell you what the church is chasing. The church is chasing the culture wars, and we've forgotten our kingdom's not of this world. I'm talking. We're going to talk about it. A lot of us have made politicians and political ideologies our God, and they're not. The church is ate up with it. Church, and we're idolaters. And you got to wake up and see it, because what God does is, see, we disguise divided allegiance by saying we're just really distracted and busy. Now, a lot of times what we do, you hear a talk like this, and again, man, I'm as kind. God worked on me over the break on this passage. I'm like, I don't want to preach this passage. I want to preach it like I remember it at Sunday school. It was real nice, and God wins. I don't want to preach it like this. And God's like, you're going to preach it like this. But what we do is we oftentimes go, yeah, disordered loves lead to disordered life. So here's what we say. You know what? My priorities are out of whack. My priorities have just gotten a mess. Why am I life so disorderly? Why are things my priorities? And here's what I want you to say. Priority, I get it. That's an English word, not a biblical word. Make sure you get that. Like, priority is not a Greek or Hebrew word that you find in Scripture repeated times. There's the idea of priority, no doubt about it. But we go, my priorities are all out of whack. That may be true, but can I tell you what the Bible says? The Bible doesn't use the word priority. What does the Bible use the word? Worship. Your emotions are being driven and your behavior is being driven by something else. We go, I need to get my priorities. No. What Scripture says, you need to be honest about your worship and what drives us at times. But we don't. Because again, in kind of the American Christendom, one nation under God, we have this guise that we think because our heritage is somehow there that we're just still it. No. So, what is an honest and candid assessment of our lives? Like being genuine. And then I'm going to give you a breakthrough prayer that I've been praying the last season of my life to help you this week, just to kind of ask God to reveal the motivations of your heart. So, I worship the one true and living God. So do I. We're on the same page. But is it not a little bit disingenuous when we say we worship the one true and living God, but yet there are times that we don't have time in day to spend any personal time with Him? I'm not talking about 2 hours. I'm talking about 15 minutes. I worship the one true and living God, but I don't really have time to spend any time in His Word or praying to Him because I'm so busy, I'm so stretched, I'm so maxed out. Yet at night, we binge Netflix series. All I'm saying is that's a tad bit disingenuous. Could you not agree? It's a little disingenuous. Church, some of you at home, it's disingenuous. Not getting on to you. I'm just going, what Satan doesn't want you to see is the disingenuous of it. I worship the one true man. I'm born a believer. Jesus is my king. I'm all about, it's a God. That's who I trust. God I trust. Okay. But not any of your money ever goes to anything to do with the kingdom. Preacher's talking about money. You better he is. Been a while. Might come back to it again. I trust God with everything. He has my all. Okay. But there's never anything in my life I don't trust. Not a whole, I'm not talking, a portion I don't trust back to Him. Is that not a tad bit disingenuous? You can email me when we talk about it. I know you will. That'll be fine. Right? When we see the church as somewhere we go to when our schedule allows, instead of our sacrifice of praise that we make to come into the house of the Lord. Come on, church. I worship the one true and living God, right? But we see it as a convenience in a world full of people worshiping false gods. Lord is full of them. World full of people worshiping false gods. May the church be the true. May the church be the power. May the church be the light. Not because we have it figured out, but because we realize that a church in a world worshiping false gods, performing for false gods, we don't have a God who asks us to perform for Him. We have a God who came and died for us. You and I, in a world of the prophets of Baal that were slashing themselves for their God, we don't have a God who asks us to slash ourselves. We have a God who slashed Himself for us at the cross of Jesus Christ. That is the hope of the gospel. It is the power of the gospel. So I want to, across the room, everybody to stand. And I want to read the ending of this story because it's so powerful. It's too good for you to sit down. I like what Pastor Mike did a few weeks ago. Made y'all stand up. I'm going to start doing that all the time. Dude loves the Lord. He knows what's going on. Make y'all start standing up. Now, here we go. I'm kidding. This is such a powerful ending. Prophets, they worship and they dance to Baal and Asherah. Nothing. Elijah comes up and says, you get that altar, you get it real wet. Remember, it's been a drought. How audacious with Elijah. Been a drought for 3 years. He goes, go get some water, put it on here. You cut that bull up. Before you do it, you get this thing soaked. And then Elijah says this. Elijah the prophet came near and said, oh Lord, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, let it be known this day that you are God in Israel. Let it be known this day, and that I am your servant, and that I have done all these things at your word. So he goes, this is not about me and Ahab. This is about you and the false gods. Look at what he says. Answer me, O Lord, that not so I can win, but that this people may know that you, O Lord, are God, and that you are turning their hearts back. That's what God's doing for some of you right now. Some of you watching online, God's turning your heart back. I just talked to people in the last service watching. God's turning your heart back. It's what he's doing in your life. Listen to me. And when he said that, this is so good, then the fire of the Lord fell. For some of you today, if you will open your eyes, the fire of the Lord's going to fall. The fire of the Lord fell. And it's not a fire to scare you. It's a fire to free you. It's a fire that'll burn up everything in your life in seconds, right? And it consumed the burnt offering and the wood and the stones and the dust, and it licked up the water that was in the trench. And then look what it says. And when all the people saw it, they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God. That is our God. That is our call. With nobody leaving, your head bowed and your eyes closed across all of our campuses this morning. Everybody with me. Nobody leaving. For some of us today, it's the day we trust in God for the first time. We say yes to the one true and living God that is Jesus Christ. Some of you right now, you've been visiting. Some of you online, you need this morning to say yes for the first time. Right where you're at, you know, man, I am all over the place. I don't get it. I hear what you're saying. I've been chasing other gods. We had 15 people last service say yes to Jesus. And this morning is your morning. And so right now, right where you're at, we have a God that came for us in Jesus Christ, took on our sin, became our sacrifice, took on our consequence, rose again and defeated the enemy once and forevermore. And by faith, it's yours. You'd say, your head bowed and eyes closed. Maybe I can lead you in a prayer. And this prayer is not a magical prayer. It's just about the posture of your heart that you'd say, Jesus, I'm choosing to follow you right now. Right where you're at. You don't have to yell it out. Just say it quietly. I'm choosing to follow you. I'm placing my trust in you. Forgive me of my sins. I'm trusting you. Forgive me of my sins. I'm choosing to follow you. I believe you died and rose again. Save me. All over this room, some of you just prayed that. At our campuses, some of you just prayed that. Online, some of you just prayed that. With nobody looking around, never embarrassed, it's a personal decision. I do want to celebrate with you. I'm not going to call you down. Will you just lift up your hand and say, Pastor, I just prayed that with you all over this room. Lift it high. All over this room, I just prayed that with you. Yes. Father, I pray your blessings. Men, women, all of you, just keep them up for a second. Men and women all over this room, today they said yes for the first time. They said yes for the first time. I'm choosing to follow you. That they would know that there is a celebration in heaven. That they have placed their trust. They don't have, God, you're not a God that asks us to perform. You're a God that wants us to depend. And that today, men and women around this room, they would know salvation is yours. Salvation is theirs in the name of Jesus. In a few moments, the prayer teams are going to be down front. I'll be hanging down front before I go to the living room. I would love to pray with you. I would love to talk to you. We would love to help you take the next step. But before we leave, because I'm going to show you worship's not a song, everybody look at me. I'm going to lead us in a verse that I've been praying in my own life, because at times I need to be reminded about my motivations. The practical, for the next 7 days, we're going to put this all over social media this week. Some of you are like, I don't do social media. Okay, we're going to email it to you. Send me like, it'll do email. Well, then write it down. Take a picture with your phone, man. Psalm 139. It's a great, just David saying, you got to know my heart. So instead of singing this morning, we're going to say it together. We're going to say it together, okay? I'm going to say it, then you're going to repeat it with me. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you. God, that I would just see what offends. Sometimes I don't see it. That's you just saying, God, point it out in me so I can own it. And lead me along the path of everlasting life. Now, I'm going to say it slowly. And I want you to repeat it with me. It's our prayer, God, this morning to you. Our declaration at Bethlehem Church. Let's say it on the count of three. One, two, three. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life. Let's do it one more time. It's so powerful. What a powerful thing to hear the church. Just ask God. The next 7 days, don't do the mail-in prayers. God bless my family. God keep us healthy. God protect us. How about asking God to reveal what's going on? So that the next 7 days, what would our church look like if for 7 days we all prayed this together? Let us see the motivations of our heart. Say it one more time. One, two, three. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. Point out anything in me that offends you and lead me along the path of everlasting life. And all God's people said.